to support this NPR station.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Coming up today, we're going to open the phones for most of the show today. We had a last-minute change of plans here. So we're going to talk about some of the things that have been in the news for the past 24 hours. And if you've got a news topic you'd like to bring up, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. In just about 25 minutes or so, we're going to talk with a local leader from the Puerto Rican community about what's going on in Puerto Rico in the wake of Hurricane Maria, and we will be doing that at the bottom of the hour. We'll also be talking about the Puerto Rican controversy, looking at the way President Trump has responded to the crisis in Puerto Rico. And we can talk about that, too. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. And Jeff Haynes is our phone producer today. I stayed up last night and watched a bit of television. I watched a part of the St. Pete mayoral debate where Rick Kreisman and Rick Baker very genteelly discussed the issues last night. And there wasn't much of a controversy. The current Mayor Kreisman indicated that he's going to keep the current police chief, and Rick Baker pretty much indicated that he's going to make his decision when he gets in office, if he gets in office. And you were left with the impression that he was going to fire the police chief just by the way he answered the question. So we could talk about the debate if you watched it last night on TV. Also, perhaps the emotional high point or low point of the Vietnam War series was last night on PBS. Last night, the Vietnam War series by Ken Burns covered the period from about mid-1969 to May of 1970. And the end of the program last night showed the Ohio National Guard armed with weapons, with live ammunition, shooting into students in a parking lot and killing four of them outright, and then wounding nine other students at Kent State. And that's where the Vietnam War series left off after last night. So if you watched that series, if you've been watching that PBS series, Vietnam, we can talk about that too. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And you can send your email into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. So those are some of the things that we can talk about. Of course, the folks in Puerto Rico are still having trouble. Supermarkets are gradually reopening on the hurricane-ravaged island. But the situation is far from normal. Customers are going home many times disappointed after going to grocery stores. Most stores remained closed around Puerto Rico yesterday, in many cases because they didn't have power. And the few that were opened Monday have long lines outside and vast empty shelves where they once held milk, meat, and other perishables. Drinking water is almost nowhere to be found in Puerto Rico. So people are beginning to look at this and maybe comparing it to Katrina and what some people are feeling is the slow response from the federal government to what's going on in Puerto Rico. Of course, Roy Moore, who is a very committed conservative Christian of the most extreme kind, won the Republican primary for U.S. Senate yesterday in Alabama, beating a candidate that had the support of the Republican establishment and the support of Donald Trump. Although I think if you listen to Trump's speech on Friday night in Alabama, you realize that even he thought that Moore was going to win that race. So he hedged when he gave his speech on Friday night. So we could talk about Roy Moore's victory, too. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. And we're going to take some phone calls, and let's see where this heads for the next few minutes. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to get one of the leaders of the local Puerto Rican community on the air to talk about the response to the crisis in Puerto Rico. Let's go to Ben, who's in Tampa. Hi, Ben. What are you interested in talking about today?
The Strange Moore special election in Alabama.
Okay. All right.
That's, you know, okay, we have Trump going and supporting the establishment candidate, and then we have Moore, the anti-establishment candidate, which is, you know, running on Trump's campaign promises and winning.
Yeah, do you think that Trump was really opposed to Roy Moore? I mean, the television journalists this morning are saying, well, this is a major defeat for Trump, but I'm not so sure Trump and Moore are that far apart. For instance, they both share this conspiracy theory about birtherism, that President Obama was not born in the U.S. and that he was an illegal president, and both Trump and Moore feel that way.
It was a payback for the lukewarm support that he did get from McConnell and Ryan. And, you know, right towards the end, you know, he's saying, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done it, in so many words.
Yeah.
He's really going to turn off his base.
Well, that's a good question. Where is the Republican Party heading? To a civil war.
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
What's going to happen in the next midterms because of this, all these other ones that are trying to go and get rid of the Beltway establishment Republicans, they're all going to be having primary opposition. And, you know, they're just going to, it's going to be a Stalinist purge. And they're going to take them out, and then, you know, a lot of the stuff that he wants to have passed, but he can't get done, not because of the Democrats, but because of the Republicans that are stopping them.
Well, on which side? Done. I mean, the Republican Party is famous for having a lot of money available at its fingertips. Which side will the money take?
No doubt about it, to the Beltway guys. You just saw that was strange. You know, they came in there and dropped, what, 10 mil on it?
Right, but in some ways, this insurgency is just an extension of the Tea Party. It's just
I guess you could call it that.
And the Tea Party was built in part by some of that establishment money, some of that money that was working against Roy Moore yesterday.
Well, not no longer. Yeah, you're right. The Tea Party was compromised. And this is kind of like the offshoot from the Tea Party.
Yeah, so and Ben, are you a Republican by any chance?
Actually, I'm a Democrat because if I didn't go and be Democrat, I'd never have any voice of any of the elections in my district.
I see. What would you like to be? Are you happy being a Democrat?
I've got to stay Democrat if I want to be able to go and influence any of the local elections for me.
Right, but if that weren't something that you had to do, what party would you join?
Well, I used to be very active with the Libertarians until I realized how futile that was, until we go and have, you know, a big change in our electoral system.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I go, you know, I'm getting tired of going and sitting out and once every 4 years getting to go and do a protest vote.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Ben, thanks a lot. Thanks for starting the conversation.
All right, me too.
All right, great to hear from you. You know, speaking of that, too, the futile... futile nature of the Libertarian Party. There's an interesting case that's going to be heard next Tuesday in the U.S. Supreme Court, and that is over gerrymandering. And there was a lawsuit brought in Wisconsin in which Democrats said, look, Wisconsin is a 50-50 state. We have pretty even party registration with Republicans. Yet Republicans dominate the state legislature, and they dominate the members of Congress that Wisconsin sends to Washington, D.C. They say they're being gerrymandered, and they say they have a mathematical formula to prove it. And so this Tuesday, the arguments over that mathematical formula are going to be heard at the U.S. Supreme Court. That's going to be a huge case. All right, Ben, thanks a lot for your phone call. Let's go to Luther in Tampa. Hi, Luther. What's on your mind today?
Good morning. This is Super Power Pill. I was just running a censorship check, you know, because they said that this is supposed to be like North Korea over here. You have to bow before the symbols and the insignias of the state. I'm wondering if there is that much brainwashing going on.
Where is the censorship going on?
It's going on everywhere, man. It's like... some forms of thought, depending on the medium, are being curbed from being, you know, the thought of the day, Meanwhile, other thoughts are being pushed in and programmed into the society. And the whole thing is the we taking the oversight out of all the agencies that are supposed to protect us. But now we're putting more oversight on the human beings, individual citizens, such as this unconstitutional bow to a flag thing. And see, that's what people really don't understand, because they haven't read the Constitution. The Constitution relieves us from the duty of having to be in a public place and forced to pay homage to anything or person by force. And I hear these people, some of them saying they want to shoot people in the head because they're kneeling and they're exercising the constitutional rights that the people have fought for. And that's what that flag means. The blood on that flag from all the wars that we've entered means that that's what we're fighting for, to at home be able to do as we please and speak as we please without being censored by others who think that their thoughts somehow are so valuable and ours are so useless that they might as well kill us along with our thoughts.
So Luther, when we fight a war, we're not fighting for the for a war. When we fight a war, we're not fighting for the right to, or rather the need to worship a flag. That's not what we're fighting for. All right, Luther, thanks a lot. I was trying to be funny. I think you missed it. Luther, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Brian in Lakeland. Hi, Brian. What would you like to bring up?
Hey, Rob, I was going to see if I could just give a quick description as fast as I could on the Battle of Khe Sanh in Vietnam.
Okay. Have you been watching the series on PBS?
No, but I do plan to watch it. I'm going to try to watch it on demand or something, because I have the PBS book on Vietnam and always find myself coming back to read up on that, because it's crazy the amount of heroism and bravery and just everything on all sides.
All right, so were you in Khe Sanh, or how old are you?
What was that? Sorry.
How old are you?
I'm 29.
All right.
No, I just read up on it. But the battle at Khe Sanh, there was 20,000 North Vietnamese that had 3,000 Marines surrounded on an air base. And that base took in about 2,500 artillery and mortar pieces a week. And the North Vietnamese were literally right outside the wire of the base every day. And we ended up losing our ammo dump on the base. It was 90% of the ammo went up in flames, and it was like 30 guys that died from it, and it burned for over a week. And so they were bringing in planes onto the airstrip and driving trucks out of the back of the plane at 50 miles an hour, just so they could, so the planes wouldn't get shot up, so they could get enough supplies there to keep everybody fed and armed. And some of those trucks would flip over driving out the truck, and they'd sling artillery shells all over the runway and supplies, and the planes would be playing bumper cars with live ammunition and stuff. And it's just crazy the amount of the magnitude of that. And the last day before the major offensive, the North Vietnamese that the battle was leading up to, there's a North Vietnamese colonel that defected, and he had all the battle plans and all the information of the major attack that was going to happen that that night. And that morning, he defected. If it wasn't for that, the base probably would have been overran.
All right, Brian, thanks a lot. I think you really got to watch the series, too, if you haven't watched it. I know you said you didn't watch it, but the series is incredible. And the Battle of Khe Sanh is covered in the series, and I'm not the one to describe it, but I think that the overall impression that I had watching the series so far, and I think I've watched all but one of the nights of the War in Vietnam by Ken Burns, but I think the overall sense that I had was that the U.S. was never able to make a case for being there, that despite all the money that we sent in there, despite the more than 500,000 service members that we sent there, despite the huge amount of military equipment and all that, the one thing that we couldn't do, and from the start, it really became apparent that what we couldn't do was win over the hearts and minds of the people. They just were not there. They were not there with us. They didn't believe in us. They didn't believe in the South Vietnamese government, and we totally, I think, misunderstood Ho Chi Minh and what he was asking for and what he stood for, the leader of North Vietnam. That comes through loud and clear. But this idea that, that you know, you can go into another country and then try to impose your will on another country just is so outlandish from the start. Just as anybody, you know, you can imagine how you would feel, or any of us would feel, if another country came over here and occupied us militarily and tried to impose something on us, we would resent it. There's no doubt about it. But I would watch the series. I highly recommend it. Let's take some more phone calls. 813-239-9663. Let's go to John in Tampa. Hi, John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hello. I'd like to talk about the... I was watching the Vietnam show also last night. And after they mentioned about the murders of the students at Kent State, they also mentioned about two black students having been killed also.
At Jackson State.
At another university. And I really had no idea about that. And I think this reflects a lot on, first, what I consider, you know, people say, well, there are three branches of U.S. government, legislative, executive, and judicial, but I think there's also another one. There's the military. And I think the military is it's mostly invisible, at least the parts we don't want to see. But I think it's the most powerful and the most, in a way, the most corrupt branch of our government. And the a lot of people think, well, the generals will say no to Donald Trump if he wants to do this or do that. But I don't think the military will be a moderating influence on Donald Trump. I think if anything is possible, it will be the exact opposite, because a lot of these generals, you know, they have a mindset where they're the hammer and every problem is a nail, and they're going to use what they have. That's what I had to say.
Yeah, all right, John, thanks a lot. Thank you very much. There are some members of the military who appear in the Vietnam War series who are high-ranking or ex-members of the military who were highly decorated, too. And they had profound doubts about Vietnam. And, you know, I wonder of the current level of military leaders in our country, those inside the administration and those inside the Pentagon, how many of them would stand up to something that was unconstitutional, as John was suggesting. I would hope that there are members of the military that would stand strongly against a war that didn't make sense. Maybe I'm dreaming. Or would stand up against something unconstitutional that the president called for. In this case, in the case of both Jackson State and the case of Kent State, it was both National Guardsmen who were under the control. I think National Guard are actually under the control, not of generals, but of the governor of each state. In the Jackson State killings, they took place on May 15th at Jackson State College in Jackson, Mississippi. And there, this is about 11 days after Kent State, a group of students were confronted by city and state police. And shortly after midnight, the police opened fire, killing two students and injuring 12. They opened fire into a residential dorm on the Jackson State campus. And it's just one of the harrowing parts of the documentary. They spend much more time on Kent State, but Jackson State was really important too, because now the war had come home and the military and the police were firing on civilians here in the U.S. And in Kent State, it's very clear that the civilians were entirely unarmed, and there was no reason to use live weapons at Kent State. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. And let's go to Danny, who's in Tampa. Hi, Danny, you're on. What would you like to say?
Good morning, Rob. You said a great statement two callers ago, and you were talking about how it was just never accepted by the Vietnamese, and it was such a horrible, useless We could have, that all could have been avoided. Everything could have been avoided if we just would have never gone in there. It was a big mistake. We should have listened to Ho Chi Minh and followed, you know. And I'll tell you, Rob, last night they showed Milai also. And, yeah. And Paul Medlow and Ernest Medina and, of course, William Cowley. And, you know, there were some soldiers who did escort some villagers to safety. You know that, no?
Yeah, I was reminded of that watching the series last night. And Danny, when you call and talk about Milai, you always bring up the helicopter pilot. Hugh Thompson Jr., who stood with his helicopter in front of American soldiers and protected Vietnamese civilian lives. And he is definitely a hero for protecting
those
civilians.
Rob, you know, I saw a documentary a few years ago, and I just, if a person can't break down in tears with that, then they have no emotion whatsoever. And also, of course, Kent State. And the governor of Ohio hated the protesters. He really, really hated them, and that was also a factor in there. And just let me say that Hugh Thompson is 100 million times a man that, let's say, Donald Trump will ever be.
Well, it certainly took a lot of courage to do that.
It certainly did, yeah. Rob.
All right, definitely. Danny, thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
All right, great to hear from you. Gina writes this, President Trump's response to Puerto Rico. Trump has not responded to Puerto Rico. I heard on the news that Trump will visit next Tuesday. Well, why does he even make the pretense? Puerto Rico has suffered the most devastation from not one but two category-rated storms. The island is running out of food and water, but let's not interrupt Trump's golf game. That's Gina. I don't know if Trump is playing golf this weekend. It'll be interesting to see if he does. Adam says, all the people who are upset about the anthem protests are silent while Trump and Moore disrespect the Constitution. Is a flag or the Constitution more important? What happened to freedom of speech and freedom of religion? A physical object is more important to them than those, not to mention how Trump is violating the Emoluments Clause every day, writes Adam. You know, I think this whole idea that Roy Moore has, that we started off as a Christian nation, really misunderstands what the divisions were at the start of the country. Not everybody was what Moore would today be called a Christian. There were all sorts of varieties of people that believed in the Christian faith. There were Quakers. There were Catholics. There were all sorts of brands of Protestants. And not one of those groups would agree theologically. And so we forget the divisions today. But back then, those divisions were stark in the late 1700s. And Roy Moore, not being a student of history, doesn't know how strongly divided, for instance, Catholics and Protestants were back in 1781. He likes to, I think, pretend that this was a Christian nation, but I think they all knew, the people that signed the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, they all knew how divided they were, and it would be dangerous to have one of their faiths be supreme. But now Moore is suggesting that his faith, his variety of Christianity, should be supreme. Very dangerous. Sharon writes this, my brother, Wayne Jackson, was interviewed regarding the Vietnam War on the Albany, New York PBS station. It aired on 9:15. So, Sharon, thank you for that. WEDU here in town has interviewed a lot of local veterans, too, and I saw it a couple Sundays ago. I don't know when they're going to replay those interviews, but that was part of their package for the Vietnam War series. Speaking of the divisions in the Republican Party and speaking of Donald Trump's response to Puerto Rico, let's go to CNN from last night. And this is an excerpt featuring two Republicans. CNN commentator Anna Navarro was debating Donald Trump economic advisor Stephen Moore, a supply-side guy, after Moore was championing the president's reaction to the crisis unfolding in Puerto Rico and insisted that Trump is not distracting us with his relentless attacks on the NFL. Here's how Anna Navarro and Stephen Moore, two Republicans, debated last night on CNN.
Windmills dressed in football uniforms when there are 3.5 million Americans, American citizens. They are our brothers and sisters. They are our responsibility, the same way that the folks affected by Katrina were our responsibility. Harvey and Irma in my state were our responsibility. We are part of the big American family. The president of the United States has got to be laser focused on this. They are in peril. People have died. More people will die. They are in stifling heat. They have no water. They have no electricity. We haven't heard from so many of them. We don't know if they are dead or alive. Desperate family members here trying to know something, learn anything about their family. Mm-hmm. And the lame, pathetic excuse for a president that is Donald Trump is tweeting about the NFL while Americans are dying. And while Americans are in this level of need, he should be talking about one thing and one thing only. Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico. Not tweeting against John McCain, not tweeting against the NFL.
I want to get Stephen in because, Stephen, I mean, you heard what she said.
And careful what you say today because I'm about to have a Puerto Rican moment right now.
She's very passionate. And, you know, a lot of people are passionate about this point because it's been almost 2 weeks since Maria happened. And now he is, you know, just focusing at least publicly on this problem and tweeting about the NFL.
Well, that's not true that he's just publicly focusing on this problem.
Why do you think it's taken?
Well, look, there's I just got the statistics from the White House. There are 10,000 FEMA people in personnel in on the ground in Puerto Rico right now. There's a million meals that have been served to the citizens of Puerto Rico. I mean, Anna's right. It is an incredible tragedy what's happened to that island. But the idea that somehow he's neglected, that he and FEMA have neglected what's happened in Puerto Rico, I think is an unfair criticism. And look, we've had three major hurricanes in the last, 3 or 4 weeks. You know, so we have FEMA on the ground in Houston. We have FEMA on the ground in Florida. They're in the Virgin Islands. They're in Puerto Rico. And to say that, that he's not devoting resource. I've seen even people say he's not devoting resource to Puerto Rico because he doesn't like Hispanic people. I mean, these are just crazy charges.
Do you think
can I ask you something? Can I ask Steve something?
Yeah.
What happens when he tweets about something? Does he not distract national attention? Do we not talk about it on TV?
Don't you think
let me ask you something. Is anybody going to die, or is there the same level of urgency to somebody kneeling towards the anthem today that there is towards what's happening in Puerto Rico today and what happened last week?
I don't see how one is related to the other, but I got to tell you this.
He has tweeted 24 times about the NFL. He's tweeted four times about Puerto Rico.
I got to tell you.
American citizens are dying.
Yeah,
people are not dying because somebody's kneeling or standing for the NFL, for the anthem.
But there are a lot of people who served our country who are completely outraged by the actions
of the NFL
players.
And there's a lot of people who served our country from Puerto Rico.
Right.
There's a lot of their relatives who are dying. But
you're saying Donald Trump is somehow neglecting.
You're making an outrageous claim that somehow he's neglecting Puerto Rico because he tweeted out something about the NFL issue instead of Puerto Rico.
Where you can protest, Anna, but to disrespect the national anthem and the flag.
And you don't think he disrespects the presidency? By going out to Alabama in a rally saying, son of a bitch, you think those are words that should be uttered by the President of the United States?
I don't think he should have used that language.
Okay, so don't you think the standard on him should be higher? And I hope that people of Puerto Rico take a knee.
Right.
Maybe then he'll take a notice.
But that
or better yet, maybe
the
they should go march
of
with tiki torches.
And there's no connection between his...
And in Navarro, they're saying that maybe the Puerto Ricans should march with tiki torches and then the president would call the Puerto Ricans fine people. Last night, that was a part of a debate that took place on CNN between two Republicans, a CNN commentator Anna Navarro and Trump economic advisor Stephen Moore, who's a supply-sider. Well, what do you think about that? Our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Mike, who's in Asheville, North Carolina. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Mr. Moore, thank you. Awesome show. There's so many takeaways from the Vietnam War series that it's hard to pick, but for today, I just got to say I am so impressed with John McCain, and I may have misjudged the man over the years, and I think he would have made a great president. And to me, that footage of him as a prisoner is so gripping. I mean, he's actually such a handsome guy and so brave, but I mean, you can just see that the guy is legit. And if Trump was laying there with two broken legs and a broken arm and offered the chance to sell the country out, what do you think he would do?
I don't know. What do you think he would do, Mike?
he wouldn't be as brave as John McCain.
Yeah, because they have a film footage of a French reporter going up to John McCain shortly after he's captured in North Vietnam after he's shot down. He's laying in bed, obviously in pain from those broken bones that you described there, Mike. And I think the French reporter is actually trying to get McCain to say something that would be in violation of the Geneva Convention. And McCain stands firm or lays there firm saying no.
Well, then also, if you recall, after that taping, he was beaten severely because he didn't. Was not obsequious enough.
He didn't thank his captors,
Exactly. So I got to say, I'm really respectful of the man. He's dying now, and he helped in his last days to save what's left of Obamacare. And again, I think if I could go back 10 or 20 years, I might have supported him for president, no matter what party he was.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling from North Carolina.
All right.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Ernie Rivera is with us right now, and I think Ernie is with the group United for Puerto Rico, Tampa Bay. Ernie, is that you?
Yes, sir, and we also have online Sarah Lopez from Orlando, and she's the coordinator for Puerto Rico Rises. Sarah, are you online?
Yes, hi, good morning.
Good morning, Sarah. How are you? First of all, Ernie and Sarah, let me ask you, what do you know about the current situation in Puerto Rico? What are you hearing?
Sarah, go ahead.
About the current situation, about one of the 300,000 topics. Because there's so many things going on right now. As far as our organization, the only topic we are kind of focusing is moving forward. The hurricane already passed. Let's start rebuilding. And that's what we are trying to do by moving these containers into Puerto Rico and their cities.
What's the biggest need that people have? What are you trying to gather?
Well, the first thing that we've worked with, we're working directly with the governor's office, the first lady. The office is the one that coordinates these efforts, and we're working with the whole team. We've spread around the whole state already in different counties. The first thing they've asked is for generators. There's a great need for generators because, as you know, the power grid knocked down, and they got the electricity working already at the central station, but there's no lines to carry this electricity. And the interior, the towns are desperate for generators. Second is water. Third is food. Fourth is medicine. And fifth is clothing.
What kind of medicine are you asking for?
Well, the antibiotics is what's most needed. And can you believe it? You know, just plain Band-Aids and alcohol and everything that they can go ahead. First aid, a lot of scratches, a lot of cuts. And antibiotic creams, stuff that we can ship down fast. We're having a cargo jet leave today from the Tampa International. It'll be leaving, at 3 o'clock today, and we're hoping to be able to have it landed in Puerto Rico this afternoon. They'll be sending the pictures over as soon as they get there. But we desperately need generators. We just sent down 100, and I know there's many groups that are showing up with large quantities, and tarps. Tarps is something that is going to be needed very, very, in large quantities.
All right. So, Ernie, here in the Tampa Bay area, where can people donate this stuff? And then, Sarah, I'm going to ask you about Polk County and Orange County and Kissimmee in just a moment. But in the Tampa Bay area, Ernie, where can people take their, if they have a generator or water or food or medicine, where can they take it?
Okay, we have different warehouses, but everyone knows in the Tampa area, Somebody Cares Tampa Bay, and that's in Clearwater. They can just go S, as in somebody, C, Cares, T, Tampa, B, as in Bay, .org. Just go there, and they can do monetary donations if they want to, but just put on the note, Puerto Rico. Or they can send equipment or whatever, and we will go and pick it up if necessary. Sarah?
Yes, in our hand, we are doing things in the long run. So we are going to be hosting a massive drive on the 21st of October. We have more than 50 cities all around the states, including Colombia, and we're going to have now on Canada, Chile, and Peru. Our thing is on the 21st of October, every city is going to be a sponsor, one town in Puerto Rico. That way we can cover the specific needs of that town. Because some towns need, for example, food for horses, food for cows. So we are waiting that the first group that Ernie is coordinating is on the focus on the first needs. We are focusing on the long runs per town. So now, right now, what we are doing is kind of getting together one city mayor with one alcalde from Puerto Rico, mayor from Puerto Rico, so that way we can take care of that specific need. And this event on the 21st of October is going to be transmitted in social media live simultaneously in all the cities. We have already 50 cities set up. So if you want to join us as a city coordinator and open your city, you can go to PuertoRicoRises.com. We are also registering volunteers, and we are ready to go. I want to appreciate the support of everybody. It's overwhelming. I already have more than 1,000 volunteers registered in the States and also in Puerto Rico.
All right. And Sarah, are you also using the Orlando airport? Are you sending planes down from the Orlando area to Puerto Rico?
The transport is being coordinated by Ernie's side, so that way everybody has their own, you know, focus in what I'm doing. He can tell you about that.
Yes, they can call me. My number's out there, I think, on the billboards already. It's 407-782-7619. That's 407-782-7619. And it goes into my phone. We send it into the headquarters here on Florida Avenue, which is distributing all the trucking and the flight and the ships now in, out of Miami.
All right.
If you let me add something quick, if please any government office, municipality is listening to us, help us to get together this mayor and this mayor from Puerto Rico to be able to do the distribution directly from the city to the pueblo in the hands of our people.
All right.
PuertoRicoRises.com.
All right. So three key points of contact: PuertoRicoRises.com, SCTB.com or .org, SCTB.org, and Ernie's number, 407-782-7619. Is there anything more that you think the people here in the Tampa Bay area need to know about the crisis in Puerto Rico?
Well, right now, there's a great need of pastors, counselors, people that could, first of all, pray. I've had from different offices, civic and governmental in Puerto Rico, say there's a great need. After a disaster like this, there's post-traumatic syndrome. People are starting to get very depressed, standing in lines 2, 3, 4 hours to fill a jug of gasoline under that Caribbean heat. It's very frustrating for a lot of people, and we're 1 week from the hurricane, and tempers start flaring up. So if there's people that have a heart, they can go and also, you know, be of support without causing, you know, more stress in the situation. But we need prayers, okay? We do need prayers, because our people are people that have always been there for everyone. I've been doing this for 35 years, helping in rescue missions all over, and it's my country now, and I love Puerto Rico. So let's keep it in our prayers.
Ernie Rivera, thanks a lot. Sarah Lopez, thank you very much. And we'll continue to give out those phone numbers and those websites.
Have a good day.
All right, thank you. And let's just go to another relief worker, Luis. We're going to go to a Luis Adorno with a group called United for Puerto Rico, Tampa Bay. Luis, welcome to WMNF. Great to have you here. Luis?
This is Luis.
Luis, how are you? Rob Lori at WMNF. Is this Luis Adorno?
No, it's actually Lara Cuente.
Okay, well, thank you for coming on. It says here you're doing hurricane relief?
Yes, sir. We're out of Tampa, yes, sir.
Okay, and what kind of work are you doing, and what do you need from the public?
So we're doing mostly everything. We're unloading, uploading, packaging, dividing everything we receive. We put it into what they are. If it's baby food, we put it with baby food. If it's diapers, we put it with diapers. So we truly need more volunteers. That is something that we can't stress enough. We need more volunteers. And if anyone has time, we're always open, 11 to 7 every single day.
And where are you?
We're at 4916 South Lois Avenue. And that's in Tampa, Florida, 33611.
All right, so you're down by MacDill Air Force Base in South Tampa, so 4916 South Lois, and so you're packaging up stuff that's going to be sent to Puerto Rico.
Yes, sir.
And you need people to package that stuff up so it can be sent. Do you need things like water and food and Band-Aids and alcohol and antibiotic cream? And
we're okay with water, but we do need more baby food and more medicine. That's something that they're running out of. So more medicine. They're asking for hydrogen peroxide, Band-Aids, wraps, and that sort of medicine. So truly more. Oh, and more batteries too. They're also running out of batteries, so we need more batteries.
Okay, so those are all important. So again, Lewis, if people want to find you, you're at 4916 South Lois in Tampa, right by MacDill Air Force Base. Can they call you?
Yes, and they can also go to our Facebook page.
Okay.
Which is Course of Action PR. Course of Action PR, and they can see all of the information that we have. And it lists the dates, time. And we also divide the volunteers by shift. So if they can't come in the morning, then we do have a shift in the afternoon. So we're pretty flexible.
All right. Well, Lewis, thanks. Thanks for doing the work you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Great to talk to you. All right, so there's two ways you can help. You can go to 4916 South Lois in Tampa and become a volunteer, or go to their Facebook page, Force of Action PR. And you can also find our previous guests, Ernie Rivera and Sarah Lopez. You can find Ernie at 407-782-7619, or go to his organization, Somebody Cares Tampa Bay. It's sctb.org. And Sarah Lopez's organization is PuertoRicoRises.com. And you heard among the biggest needs, generators, water, food, medicine, Band-Aids, alcohol, hydrogen peroxide, wraps, batteries, baby food, diapers, and volunteers. All right, let's go back to the phones. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. And Brad's in Port Richey. Hey, Brad, you're on. What would you like to comment about?
Yes, good morning. Rob, I've been following the Vietnam program on PBS.
Mm-hmm.
Really learning a lot more about it than what I knew back in the day. My brother was killed in Vietnam on April 1st in Tay Ninh province in the Iron Triangle. They were doing search and destroy, and had cleared the area of mines, and then Viet Cong come up the night and relayed the mines and everything. So my brother and his patrol went out early in the morning. Excuse me. He was a grenadier. He was a point man. They were ambushed. He dove for cover and landed on a Claymore mine. And needless to say, there wasn't much in the closed casket. But my dad wrote a poem to the letters to the editors there in upstate New York. And I thought if I could read it real quick, see what kind of commentary I can get back on it.
Okay, and Brad, do that. Brew that. And tell Brad, tell us what your brother's name was.
Gary Fawcett.
Okay, all right. Go ahead, Brad. Thank you.
My dad, Ernest Fawcett, wrote this. Now, I'll do this quick for you. No thoughtful words or well-meant deeds can ever erase the shame. You fought for peace and freedom, but you only died in vain. If you were here with us today, you'd hang your head and cry. You could easily see the reasons why you had to die. The acts of cowardice and treason that put you in your grave still roll across our once proud land in a dark, destructive wave. Until the badges of honor and courage are proudly worn again, you and your buddies will remain the nation's forsaken men. Sleep on, brave soldier, may it not be long until the world free at last will burst forth in song. And those who have lived by the laws of the beast will again be ruled by the great dove of peace. My dad wrote that on my brother in April 1st, 1967.
So really early on, too, relatively early on in the war.
Yes, yeah. very much so. He was 20 years old. He was only over there 4.5 months.
Wow. All right, Brad, thank you. Thank you for the poem, too, and thanks to your dad.
Okay, thanks, sir. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Brad. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Simon, who's in Tampa. Hi, Simon. How are you? What would you like to comment about?
Good, man. How are you doing today?
I'm good. What's up?
I just would like to say that people forgot the real reason why we're in this situation in the world today. And the real reason is that people have forgotten about God. And we say we love God, but we really worship sex, money, and vanity. Until we turn back to God, the world is going to be in a worse situation than in today. Trump is not the problem. The government is not the problem. The way we're living is the problem. Until we change the way we live and until we stand up and do something about it and change the way we're living, it's going to get way much worse than it is today.
And Simon, who has the right line on God? Because the people that went into Vietnam say that they were godly. Donald Trump says he's godly. There are all sorts of people that say
God.
Your actions define God.
The way you live, the way you talk, the way you walk define God. Your words don't mean nothing. You can say anything out your mouth, but what does your action say? Anybody can say they're a Christian, but do you live by the Bible, or you just read the Bible and do what you want to do?
And Simon, what about those people that don't believe in Christianity?
Well, you don't have to believe in Christianity. God is not for everybody. God is for the chosen. His chosen people are already chosen. His chosen people are already chosen.
Okay. Simon, thanks a lot. Thanks for your comment.
Thank you.
All right. So there you go. A wide variety of points of view here on WMNF. And if you would like to add yours, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. There are there's a lot of emails here. I'm going to try to read them and try to do them some justice. We've got an open line, too, by the way. If you call right now, you'll be able to get on the air pretty quickly. Here's somebody from the 240 area code, anonymous, or I guess that's Wes, writes, I highly recommend a book called On Strategy, A Critical Analysis of the Vietnam War by retired Lieutenant Colonel Harry Summers for a great perspective on what went wrong, writes Wes. And this person says that we should look into the case of Dante Daniels. All right. Thank you for that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Steve says this about the Vietnam series. He says, I watched and had to turn off the episode last night. It was gut-wrenching. The interviewed Marine was still shaken to this day about the dehumanizing effect of the war. He had to objectify the Vietnamese enemy in order to visualize his hate and then shoot and then kill them. He gave up on his belief of coming home alive. Our Tiger Force that Westmoreland and other generals saw value in suspended the rules of engagement and killed everyone in their path, men, women, children, mothers, grandparents. That was it for me. Really difficult to watch, says Steve, about the Vietnam series on PBS. And then here's somebody talking about the founders of the this person, I guess they're anonymous, says, or this is Joe from St. Petersburg. He says the founders specifically, via unanimous Senate and signature of John Adams, approved the Treaty of Tripoli. And this treaty obviously represents the original intent of the founders. That Treaty of Tripoli, as I remember it, says that the U.S. is not, in any sense, a Christian nation. Here it is. The quote from the treaty is, "The government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion." That's Joe, who's an attorney, who sent us that. Thank you, Joe. 813-239-9663. James says, in 1969, my senior year at Plant High School, all males loaded onto a Greyhound bus, went to Jacksonville for a physical, and was 4F, not healthy enough for cannon fodder. I guess this is James, who was deemed to be 4F. Have always, on the one hand, been happy and felt bad for not going, writes James. And Gina writes this, without water, without fresh water, cholera in Puerto Rico won't be far behind. Jeffrey says, if you have a Periscope account, you can watch and ask directly what these fellow Americans need in Puerto Rico, writes Jeff. Jeff, thank you for that. And FM writes, great communication network. Get the word out to this group. They need ham radio operators. All right, that's FM saying that. And let's go to Jim in St. Petersburg. Hi, Jim. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. I was on that bus, by the way, on the way to Jacksonville, and myself and someone else on the bus tried to convince them, you know, to not go along with it. And it was like there was this inherent belief that there was something very wrong. But in the mass of people in our population, you know, what was it? Brainwashing? I mean, it's so reminiscent of today, where the it's just massive ignorance and massive belief in the worst possible things. And, you know, it's just a similar situation. But what I really wanted to say was, you know, along those lines, my father was a pretty conservative guy. My mother was a, you know, a Catholic woman who no doubt had her doubts about what was going on, but everyone just went along with it. You know, we were like criminals on the outside. They were all right about it. Everybody was right about it until they weren't. And when they shot him at Kent State, that's when my mother turned. Turned completely around, you know. And it probably was millions of people who did the same thing, who reacted the same way. But it was so noticeable. And I'm sure it affected, you know, other people too. But it was just the thought.
Yeah, well, you know, I do think for a while, I mean, I remember, you know, being in high school and college during those years and even grade school. You know, for a while, I think people honestly believed, well, the communists who are evil, that's what people thought back then and have no redeeming value are going to slowly take over Southeast Asia and then finally somehow make the leap and come over the Pacific Ocean and take over the U.S. I think that was the fear. And then the longer this went on and the more we read about the Vietnamese people, you know, wanting their own independence and hating the occupation of the Japanese and hating the occupation of the French and knowing that Ho Chi Minh for a time spent time here in the U.S., admired Thomas Jefferson, worked in Boston at the seat of the American Revolution, worked in a kitchen in Boston for a time and loved the ideals of the Declaration of Independence. And as we found out about that, people began to question this idea that they were somehow had evil intent towards us. And I think the more people learned about it, the more they backed away from the war. But it took a long time. You're right. I think, you know,
it was just so religious in the type of, you know, patriotic belief that they had that this was it. You know, this was the way to do it.
Yeah, and there were, you know, there were so many people. I remember being in arguments with people at the time. There were so many people that believed that we had to prosecute the Vietnam War, and you were crazy, just like you said, if you didn't support the war.
So. But no one was, you know, no one was out there shouting about the good points of Ho Chi Minh at that time. You know, there was no...
Yeah, I think there were several kinds of demonstrations. There were those that used to chant, Ho, Ho, Ho Chi Minh, and there were others that were just, you know, said, hey, as an American, I don't think this is really a good idea. Hey, Jim, thanks a lot. We're out of time.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, great to talk to you. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. We'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for NOLA. He's hosting the Midpoint program today. This is WMNF Tampa.
And my love hope never to come back.